We're going to pick back up with verse 4, Ecclesiastes 5:4. When you make a promise to God, do not delay in keeping it, because God does not receive pleasure from fools. Now, you know what that tells me? If you make a promise to God and you're not prompt in keeping it, that we're fools, right? Whatever you promise, fulfill it. And then he goes on to tell us that not promising is better than promising and not keeping the promise. You're better off not to make a vow than to make it and not keep it. And then this is interesting. Do not make your mouth sin against you. If you make a promise and you don't keep it, your mouth sinned against you. Neither say before God's messengers that you made a mistake. Well, I made a mistake. You know, I didn't really mean that. I didn't know this was going to come up. No, it doesn't matter. He said, why rouse God's anger with such a statement and bring destruction to the deeds you have done? When dreams increase, vain words increase. We should fear God. If you see the poor oppressed, and judgment and justice abused in the district, do not panic over the matter, because the power above powers watches from high above. Now, that was I looked at that one for a little while when I was studying this and putting this together. I thought, you know, sounds like he's talking about today. You look around, you see all the injustices done, and you see these people that think that they're so powerful and high and mighty do this and do that. God said, don't concern yourself with it. Don't worry about it. There's a higher power. They won't get by with it. They may think they have gotten by with it. They may get by with it in your lifetime, but they won't get by with it. Everyone profits from the earth. The king himself served by the field. I better not say that. Never mind. I'll just move right along. I was thinking, huh? One who loves silver will not be satisfied with silver. And isn't that interesting? He that loves wealth will not be satisfied with increase. So this insatiable love is futile. In other words, you love silver, when's enough? How much will it take to satisfy you? He can't give you enough to satisfy you. How much wealth will it take to satisfy? I've never seen anybody that says, you know, I don't want more. Maybe there are some. I could use more, couldn't you? I mean, think about it. But that won't satisfy you. When goods increase, consumption increases. So what advantage is it to the owner to only see it with his eyes? You know, this right here is a thing that absolutely amazes me. These large conglomerates and the large corporations buying out this corporation, that corporation, and their operating ratio decreases. In other words, their net profit decreases. They talk about going from a $20 million a year company to $200 million a year company, and yet they actually decreased in their percentage of net profit. I don't understand that, and your liabilities increase dramatically. So what good is it? To brag about, just to see it, it won't satisfy, because you'll never get big enough. The sleep of the laborer is sweet. Doesn't matter if he eats a little or he eats a lot. But the abundance of the rich will not allow him to sleep. You know what that's saying? He's going to lie awake at night. He can't rest. He's worried. But the regular old laborer, you know, he just Proud to get in bed, sleeps well. There is a distressing evil seen in the world. Now this is what it is. Wealth kept to the owner's detriment. Through bad business dealings, he loses his wealth. After he's lost his wealth, he becomes the father of a son. The problem is he doesn't have anything left to give to his son. And he emphasizes that nothing. As he came from his mother's womb with nothing, he'll depart with nothing. So, his labors left him empty-handed. Think about that. Another distress and evil in this situation is just as he came, so he goes. In regard to his labor, says his profit is gone just like the wind. So his days are miserable, consumed with much irritation, affliction, and strife. You know, this book does not cease to amaze me. It's a good thing we have Proverbs before Ecclesiastes, right? Because here it's just basically looking at the negative side of everything, isn't it? Behold what I have seen to be good and also becoming. So there is a positive side, and this is what it is. Eat, drink, and enjoy the good of the labor done in this world all the days of your life which God gives you. That's your portion of life. That's your allotment. Enjoy it. Enjoy your portion. Don't complain about your portion. Enjoy your portion. Also, every person whom God has given an increase in wealth and permission to partake from his allotment should rejoice in his labor. It's God's gift to it. You understand what he means by that? Some have the assignment of gathering wealth, but they don't get it. The wealth of the sinner is laid up for whom? It's not for the sinner, is it? So he has this job of working and gathering all this, but he's not given the privilege of enjoying it. And that's why he's saying here, you know, this is a real advantage, you know, when you get wealth and you're also permitted to partake of it as well. He says, that's God's gift to you. And he said he'll not overemphasize himself throughout his life because a joyful heart responds to God. You know, you take a person that really has a heart toward the Lord, and God blesses that person and their hearts toward the Lord, they're not going to get their emphasis in the wrong direction. But it's the person whose heart's never really toward the Lord in the first place that they can increase and turn and just neglect God. But if their heart's toward God, they're not going to be overwhelmed with all these riches. They just thank God. I've seen people, tremendous givers, you know. Wealth didn't own them, they owned the wealth. And there's a difference. We get into chapter 6. It says, there is an evil that I've seen in the world. This is Solomon talking. He says, it's common to people. Well, what is that evil? God gives man accumulation of wealth and honor so that his soul lacks nothing it desires, yet God does not empower him to consume it. See, this is the opposite of what we just read. He said a stranger consumes it. Well, this experience is futile. He said it's an unfortunate calamity. A man may father 100 children and live a long time. But if he's not satisfied with good and does not have a burial place, a miscarriage is better than he. Something, isn't it? And he goes on and explains why. He said the miscarried child was short term. It was carried in darkness. No one ever knew its name. He said that stillborn child never saw the sun, never knew it. So he experienced more tranquility than the old man. Even if the old man lived to be 1,000 years but never experienced satisfaction. And both the stillborn and the old man go to the same place. They leave the natural world, enter the spirit world, right? They die, they're buried. Everyone's labors for his mouth. But a person's never satisfied. How many have ever eaten enough? Only at the time, right? I mean, you go to the New Testament, you know, man doesn't work, doesn't eat. So work's directly related to eating, isn't it? So why do we labor? So we'll have something to eat, right? I mean, that's one of the reasons. So he says everyone's labors for his mouth. And yet a person is never satisfied. What does the wise have over the fool? Why do the oppressed know to behave before the strong? Can you answer those questions? I think that last one says they don't want their brains beat out, you know. just good common sense there. The vision of the eyes is better than the wandering of the mind. I had that taught me at an early age. And that wandering of the mind is just as futile as chasing the wind. I mean, you know, you what do we call it, daydreaming? You can get out there and let your mind wander, and you can be a million miles away. I did that a lot in school. That's, you know. I'd body be in the classroom. I just wasn't there, you know. Any of you like that? Yeah. But he said it's futile as chasing the wind, you know. I lived my life in some books out of the library, you know, those racing books. I mean, I was there. But I never did get there. He was just chasing the wind, you understand? Futile, right? So, enjoy what you see. That which has already been has been named, and it is recognized by man who is not able to contend with one more powerful than he. Now, this probably means a whole lot more. I'm sure it means a whole lot more than I know, but you think about it. Sun, moon, stars, earth. Let's just be real basic, okay? You ever thought about changing the name of any of them? They're named before we were ever born. They'll be carrying their name long after we die, right? So we're going to say, God, you named them wrong? Just one way to look at that. For as much as there are many possessions, many events, many circumstances, vanity increases, so how's man better? Is this generation better than the previous generation? You know, I mean, when all these things continue to increase, is man any better off? You know, it's interesting. I think back just in my own life. Our entertainment would have been, sitting in the front yard or backyard, whichever the case may have been. You understand, it was too hot to be in the house during the summertime. But just sitting there, and that was your entertainment. You thought you had it all right. You didn't know any better. Then you start getting things. And then you get this event to go to and that event to go to. And before long, as the old saying goes, the tail's wagging the dog. And you can look back and say, you know, I was probably more content back then than now. In a lot of cases. Why? Because so often the possessions and the doing this, the doing that, the dreams that we seek, they end up wearing us out or stressing us out. Self-inflicted stress, isn't it? So is man better off? Which is better, not to have to worry about money or have so much it worries you every day. Whether you're going to lose it, what are you going to do with it? I wouldn't know that last one. I've never been there. But I got a feeling I do know the answer. Who knows what is good for man in this life? All the days of his life are like a shadow which disappears. So the next time you're out walking, you see your shadow on the ground, and then you go back out and you don't see that shadow, say, yep, that's the way it's going to be with me. I was there, but no longer. It's the way it is with all of us, right? So I'd better not put much emphasis on this life. Our emphasis must be on the eternal life, the things of the Spirit, things of God. Who can tell man what will come to pass after he leaves this world? See, that's a reiteration of something we talked about earlier. Anyone know? No, we don't know. Just those bits and pieces, right? God put enough information in here to give us a hope. Something that we can grasp. That gives us a determination. Something you can dig into and say, that's where I'm going. But we don't know all that. What awaits us. When you were 12 years old, did you know what awaited you when you'd been adult? You know, you can think you know. You're going to have this, you're going to have that, you're going to do this, you're going to do that. And then when you get there, you find you may not have this or that, and you may not be doing exactly what you thought you wanted to. Chapter 7. Honor is better than riches. And I'm going to tell you this. This is that little phrase right there is extremely profound. I've seen a lot of things, bad business dealings, things to get wealth or to get money, taking advantage of people, doing this or that by hook or crook. And yet the Bible teaches honor is better than that. It's better to have a good reputation. It's better to be a person of integrity than to have a lot of money in the bank. You'll be much more respected by both God and man. He said the day of one's death is better than the day of one's birth. Isn't it interesting how we celebrate birthdays and cry at funerals? Don't stone me now. But what does he say? Which is better? The birthday or the funeral? The day of one's death is better than the day of one's birth. Why? Mission accomplished. Out of here. It's better to go to a house it's better to go to a house that is mourning than to go to a house that is feasting. Because mourning is the end of all men. The living should ponder this phenomenon. Sorrow is better than laughter. Sadness of faith makes the heart better. I didn't write it. I'm just telling you what it says. And this man was the wisest man to live, you understand? These are the things he was saying. I guess if you're on the bottom, the only way you have to look up, right? The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning. Now look at this. But the heart of the fool is in the house of the lighthearted. Now don't raise your hand, but are we wise or fools? It is better to hear the rebuke of a wise man than to hear the song of a fool. You know, I was thinking today, I was looking at something we'll get to later on, but how the contrast between rebuke and praise or flattery. Let's use the word flattery. And thinking about how people prefer the flatter over the rebuke. Many people prefer the flatter over the rebuke when they know the flatter's a lie. Know the rebuke's the truth, so they prefer a lie over the truth. And you just have to stop and ask yourself, you know, am I in that category? Had I'd rather someone flatter me or tell me the truth? If I'd rather for them to flatter me, I'm a fool. But if I'd rather hear the truth, then I'm wise. Something to think about. Better to hear the rebuke of a wise man than to hear the song of a fool. As the sound of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of a fool. Both are useless, really, if you think about it. They're empty. I mean, what's the crackling do? What does the noise do? It doesn't do anything, does it? What does the noise of a fool do? Nothing. No substance to it, right? Oppression makes a wise man foolish, and a bribe causes one's heart to go astray. Now, I think we can. That's pretty self-explanatory. The end of a matter is better than the beginning of it. Well, you know what? Now, right there, scriptural. I forgot Ecclesiastes 7:8. I need to remember that scripture. Right there is the living proof for something that I think. I just have to remember that. Because I always like finishing the project better than I do beginning it. The end of a matter is better than the beginning of it, and the patient in spirit are better than the proud in spirit. I expect there's a lot to that right there. You know, I think about different mindsets. Some people, you know, they start the project and they want to finish the project, but they're patient and do the project as it should be done. Others want to do the project and get the glory out of it and want to hurry up and get it done because they don't want all, you know, they don't want to put up with all the labor and everything involved and take shortcuts and all this other stuff. Just a thought I had when I was looking at that. Do not be quick in spirit to be angry, because anger rests in the bosom of the foolish. Well, I guess most of us have fallen in that foolish category somewhere in our life, haven't we? Some more than others. Do not say, why were the former days better than these? It's not wise to ask this question. I'm going to tell you something. I've had people to talk to me about how church used to be, the good old days. And people start, well, I wish we could go back to, I've had them to tell me this, I wish we could go back to those old times, those old days. And God says, that's foolish. And in other words, this scripture right here says, don't be talking about that. Don't say, why were the former days better than these? It's not even wise to ask that question. That day was good in that day. That day's not for now. To everything there's a season, remember? That day was its season. And I bet you if that day was here today, you wouldn't be happy with it. Interesting. Oh, I bet it didn't. I'm not supposed to be bet. Okay. Wisdom is good with an inheritance. exceeding all that is necessary for the living. I'm going to tell you, without wisdom, an inheritance can go in a hurry, can't it? Wisdom is a defense, just as money is a defense. Wisdom gives life to those who have it as they gain knowledge. Wisdom gives life to those who have it as they gain knowledge. Observe God's work. Who's able to make straight what God's made crooked? So, these statements in here are so profound that, I mean, they just, to me, are somewhat mind-boggling, because you don't have an answer. I mean, an adequate answer anyway. You start thinking about, I can look at the mountains and you look at, look, just like the Oconee Leftes River up, Cherokee runs through there. You talk about crooked. And I don't know, from the time that I was a small kid going up there, that place, that's always amazed me. Just the sound of the water and the thing. And then you stand back and you look at that and you think, who's going to straighten this out? God makes it that way, you going to straighten it out? Just shows you that there's such a higher power than us. If we just stop and think about that, and the infinite wisdom of God, and the abilities and all that God possesses, and just enjoy it instead of trying to change it. And I think too often we expend our energies trying to change what God has, like trying to change the Word of God to make it fit into our patterns or whatever that we make. Whatever. You're not going to straighten out what God's made crooked. You're not going to make crooked what He's made straight. Good days bring good, but also observe bad days. He said both of them are made by God. Whether it's a good day or a bad day, God made both of them. So man can't discover anything about his future. You can't judge one day off of another day, can you? Who can predict what's going to take place tomorrow? God, not man. In the days of his vanity, this is talking about Solomon, he said he observed all. Now, I just think about this. This man was evidently a guy that paid attention to things around him. You understand? He said, the just perishes in his righteousness, and the wicked persists in his wickedness. So, don't be overly righteous, and don't be overly wise. Don't destroy yourself. Don't be overly evil. Don't be overly foolish. Why die before your time? Now, if I understand that scripture, you can die before your time. People say, well, when my time comes, I'll die. Well, you may die before your time comes. If you're overly evil or overly foolish, right? He says it's beneficial to embrace these truths. One who fears God will depart from all evil and foolishness. Wisdom strengthens the wise more than 10 warriors strengthen a city. I thought, you think about that. One wise man is better than 10 warriors. No wonder he said wisdom is better than strength, huh? There is not a just man in the earth who does good and never sins. No, not one. Do not pay attention to every word spoken, and you'll not hear your servant speak bad about you. Now, you know, I had to learn this. Learn this in the secular work. Just get away from the guys, because you don't want to hear what they're saying about you. Now, if you hear what they're saying about you, then you're going to be as big a fool as they are, because you're going to go over and probably make a fool out of yourself. So you're better off just not to know. And as a minister, I promise you, you don't want to know what people are saying about you. You just make it a point to keep yourself out of that way. Don't listen. If you listen, hey, children will talk about their parents. Just choose not to hear things. Get away from it. Because as good as you are, there's probably somebody somewhere that has something bad to say about you. Or me. Okay? It says your heart knows that many times you've spoken bad about others. I suspect that everybody in this room, somewhere in our lifetime, has said something bad about someone else. So why should we be astounded or take offense because someone says something bad about us? They're just doing what we've done, right? Wisdom tested all Solomon's endeavors. I had to read this one several times. Solomon said, you know, well, I'll be wise. But then it says, but it was far from him. Now, we're talking about the wisest man that ever lived now. He says, you know, I just made up my mind I'll be wise. He said, but it was far from me. Who can find that which is deep and far away? In other words, I got a little bit of wisdom, but this has not even, the surface hasn't been scratched yet with wisdom. I mean, you know, Solomon was a wise man, but he didn't know how to create the heavens and earth and all this other stuff, did he? Wisdom says, I was there when that happened. So the wise man says, I'm going to seek wisdom, and after seeking wisdom, I find out that it's beyond me. Then he thoroughly considered in his heart so that he could know, develop, and search out wisdom and intelligence and to know the nonsense of foolishness and folly. And I thought, that almost sounds like a paradox. A wise man studying nonsense and foolishness. So he would know it. And this is what he found, more bitter than death, the woman whose heart is snares and nets and her hands are shackles. They capture and bind. One who is good before God will escape, but the sinner will be captured by her. Now, I don't think he's just talking about women in general. More than likely, he's talking about prostitutes. The sinner will be captured by her. And then he says, look, this is what I've discovered. One after the other brought understanding. One man among a thousand I've been able to find. But a woman among all these I've not been able to find. And I'm going to ask you to help me. Out of a thousand, he said, I could find one man. Now, you think about that. That's a real low percentage, isn't it? Out of the women, I didn't find one. What is it that he's not able to find? Have you ever thought about that? What is it that he's looking for that he can't find? I have a suspicion, and let's call it that, okay? Not a revelation, but a suspicion, that he's referring to someone that is more interested in him than them. Loyal, faithful, committed. He said, I found one man. One man, this is my understanding of this. One man that I could trust absolute confidence in. I got 1,000 women over here, but there's not one of them I'll put confidence in. Now, that's my thought of where he's coming from, and don't set that in concrete, okay? And then I just asked myself, who's the one man? I wonder who the one man. If it was David, I would have said Jonathan. But I did wonder about Solomon. Who was that one man? And I don't know. Do you? After his observation, Solomon made this statement. God made man upright, but men have sought out many plans and schemes. In other words, God made them upright, and men are making themselves unupright. They're tearing down, going in the opposite direction of what God made them. Now, don't get depressed with this book, okay? I have to constantly remind you of that, because just reading this on the surface, it sounds like Solomon was a very depressed man, and possibly was. You figure you're the wisest man on earth, so everybody else in your estimation is foolish. Have you ever thought about that, really? Solomon was the wisest man on earth, so wouldn't the things going on around him seem like foolishness to him, and he could get depressed? Don't anybody know anything? Oh, Larry's been there.
With much wisdom comes much
sorrow. Grief. It's all running together right now.
But no wonder.
So you can see why he wrote what he wrote. So I could see where there could be an element of depression. I'm not talking about manic depression and all this. I'm just talking about the where you just see things aren't going right, and I don't know why they can't see this. If I see it, why can't they see it, Prudence, Larry, prudence. Yeah. Just read this book. That's right. It brings things down to proper perspective, right? Puts man in his position in light of God. You here and God's way up there, right? Chapter 7, verses 1 through 3. Honor is better than riches, and the day of one's death is better than the day of one's birth. It's better to go to a house that is mourning than to go to a house that is feasting, because mourning is the end of all men. The living should ponder this phenomenon. Sorrow is better than laughter. Sadness of face makes the heart better. What is, if that's the three verses, right?
Yeah.
All right, what is... Well, I don't think it's a contradiction. I think what he's doing is almost like an explanation that, first off, honor better than riches. That sort of stands alone. The day of one's death is better than the day of one's birth. And then he says, go to the house of mourning, not the house of feasting. In other words, death ends in what we generally think of as mourning, right? And so what he's saying, the day of one's death is better than the day of one's birth. But what do we celebrate? we celebrate the birth, not the death. And he says, listen, you might as well get used to mourning because that's going to be the end of your life. And that seems to be the flow of this, is he's putting the emphasis more on the mourning than on the feasting and rejoicing and happy-go-lucky type living. It's, to me, it's a more serious approach, and he says sorrow is better than laughter. Now, that's beyond natural comprehension, but when you think of it in light of what he's saying, sadness of face makes the heart better. I think to me, the message that's being conveyed is that you're taking a more serious approach. And any time you take a more serious approach to the heart, then you're going to make a better decision, more quality in the things that you do than just in a lighthearted approach and happy-go-lucky type thing.
So he said, don't smile, Daddy. It's going to get worse.
Well, you know, here again now, this is where you have to take the Bible, all the Bible, and put it together. Proverbs, the same man. A merry heart does good like medicine. Okay? So it's like writing a story and giving two different perspectives. In Proverbs, he's given one perspective. In Ecclesiastes, he's given another perspective. One of them is looking at the futility of this natural life and how empty this natural life is and how we put our emphasis in the wrong place. And that's really what the book of Ecclesiastes is about. And so the preacher is given an admonition through this book that don't put your attention on this life. Don't you be just partying and thinking everything's made, you've got money, you've got this. That's not what it's about. It will not fulfill you. And when you come down to the end of your life, you're going to look back and you're going to regret it anyway. You won't be satisfied. You're unfulfilled. Now, that's strictly from a natural approach, you understand. Proverb, he's given more of wisdom into this thing. And here he's given an overall wisdom, is seek God. He'll conclude the book by saying, this is my conclusion. I've tried it all. Fear God, keep His commandments. That's the whole duty of man. That's how he sums the thing up. And you have to keep that in perspective or you can lose the message of the book. But always put all the Bible together. The Bible won't contradict itself. It supplements. Okay? It's like two of us can witness an accident out here. You see things one way. You're looking at one thing. I'm looking at another thing. You give your report. I give my report. We may say different things, and yet when you put the two reports together, it's not that they contradict. They add to one another, and you get a more detailed report. Joe DeShoff told me something that stuck with me. You know, it's how some people are visual, and some people are audio. Some people, you know, hear. Some people see. So you approach them from that perspective. What did you hear? What did you see? A person that's tuned in to hearing. Well, I heard this, I heard this, I heard this, I heard this. The other one's saying, I saw this, I saw this, I saw this. Now put both of them together. And then you get what the sounds as well as the sight, right? So you have a more comprehensive report.
That's about like when in the New Testament they're talking about the stone being rolled away. One describes each person. From what I see is one seen the angel, one seen the stone moved, but it's all the same. Just different perspectives.
You take the Gospels, and I've heard people say this, well, they contradict. No, they don't contradict. This guy's given his account. And this guy's given his account. This guy's given his account. You want the most accurate account? Put them all together. And then you'll see pieces in that one left out. Another one, his emphasis was on this. This guy's emphasis was on this. We'll put them together. It's not the contradict. You get a more complete rendering of the account. Okay? Out of time? Shut up? Is that what you said? Okay. Oh, that you would bless us indeed, enlarge our territory, that your hand would be with us to keep us from evil, that we may not cause pain. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make His face shine upon you and be gracious unto you. The Lord lift up His countenance upon you and give you peace. Rise up, O Lord, let your enemies be scattered, and let those who hate you flee before you.